Welcome to Money Moves. I'm Jill Schlesinger. I'm joined by my co-host, Mark Talisio. Hey, we're both certified financial planners. We are here to take the mystery out of your financial life. We are here to solve your financial questions. We're calling out the BS. We are trying to keep you on track, but we are doing it with a sense of humor. And I promise, it's going to be okay, guys. Just come on with us.
What about me today? What do you think of my shirt?
Mark is...
I am a proud CFP professional.
Mark is a certified financial professional and a planner professional, and he is he almost got his CFP designation taken away from him because he was such a bastard with them about his order of this t-shirt. Maybe, did you get me one, Mark? I mean, you went through all that nonsense and you didn't get me one, so that's silly.
Somehow I don't see you sporting this.
I could wear it. It's a golf shirt. Big deal. It's a polo shirt. Right now, we have million-dollar starter homes. Can I say that again? A starter home is basically the lower third of home price values in a particular area. There are now triple the number of areas, U.S. cities, that have million-dollar starter homes. For most normies, people living in like other parts of the United States, a starter home is $200,000. The median home price right now is $400,000. But home prices have gotten sickly expensive since the pandemic. How is anyone supposed to buy a house, Mark?
Yeah, good luck. But I think, like you just said, you got to keep in mind that the vast majority of the country is not a million-dollar starter home. It's still in the 200,000-something range. When you think about where these million-dollar starter homes are, it kind of makes sense, right? You're talking about the big cities along the coast. You're talking New York, Massachusetts, Connecticut, California, Washington. So I think you got to kind of take it with a grain of salt. But yeah, in certain markets across the country, it's insane. So that comes down to the, do I rent or do I buy?
And I'll tell you what, I like renting. Renting is flexibility. It's opportunity. I was talking today to someone at work and she goes, I did the math. And this is what I love about your generation, not you, Mark, because you're too old for it. But anyone who's under the age of, say, 45, I love this because it becomes more of a math problem than this crazy aspirational nonsense that people who are my age are feeding to you. And the person said to me, she's like, you know what? I did the math. I realized that if I took the down payment and I invested it, and then I took the difference between my rent and what it would cost me to carry this house, and I invested it, then I'd be far better off. I think she's right, Mark. So if you're sitting there saying, I'll never buy a house, maybe that's okay. A house being part of the American dream, to me, is a pretty old-fashioned notion. It's not great advice for you to tell your kids, oh, you should buy a house, you should buy a house. I mean, unless you want to fork over the money to do it and you can afford to do it, great, do it. But if you are looking at kind of goading your kid into this path, I don't think it makes sense for everybody. I really don't. And I think we have to start dropping these old sort of tried and truisms. And I'll tell you what's tried and true. Get your money invested in your 401k plan. Get your emergency reserve fund. Pay down your consumer debt. Getting yourself into a house that you can't afford and then that prevents you from saving for your retirement, it's not going to do you any good. There's a guy who follows the housing market that I love. His name is Bill McBride. And he put this to me. I was just so fascinated. He says, you know, just think about this. In the last 5 years since the pandemic, we had prices going up dramatically, right? Because everyone was like, oh my God, I can buy a house and mortgage rates were really cheap and people were moving out and buying houses. Okay, fine. Then you also had mortgage rates basically more than doubling. We have homeowners insurance rising, property taxes going up. So Mark, the home that you could have bought 5 years ago, that home today, to buy the exact same home, costs 80% more. Can I just put that out there for you, gang? Like, you're talking about saying, like, I have to pay 80% more for the exact same house that I could have bought 5 years ago. So you know what that tells me? You were either lucky enough to have the right time and place to buy a house 5 years ago. Today, the calculus is telling you, keep renting. Don't worry. You know, Mark, this whole idea of the American dream, you know when it came about, was essentially after World War II. You had all these veterans coming home from the war. You had the United States deciding that it was going to help these veterans, the white ones, by the way, because people of color were not able to get all the benefits of the GI Bill. But they were going to make money available to buy a house and to go back to college and to do these wonderful things. And then all of a sudden, that was the American dream for that generation. Now, flash forward, and I think the idea that we are tethering ourselves to a notion that was from 1945 to 53 is kind of crazy. If you have a question about whether you should buy or rent and you want to give your numbers to us, get in touch with us. Go to JillOnMoney.com, click the Contact Us button, and Jillionaires, we will help guide you through this. Okay, next up, we have Jillionaire Dorian, who joins us from New York City. Hello, Dorian. How are you?
Good. How are you? Thank you for having me.
Oh my gosh, we're excited. Tell us what's on your mind. How are you doing?
My question is, I have a bunch of destination weddings this summer, and the costs are really starting to add up between the flights, the hotels, the gifts, the bachelorette trips. I'm even traveling to Spain twice.
Twice?
And each trip costing, I know. Each trip is costing around like $2,000 once I factor in the flights, hotels, rental cars, everything. So I just was wondering, how do I balance, you know, being a good friend while also being responsible with my finances?
Jeez.
I mean, it's by the
way, pretty nice to be Dorian, huh?
Well, let me just say this, Dorian. You're asking how you can be a good friend. I'm asking, why are your friends doing this to their friends? This feels like a little excessive to me. So, okay, let's talk big picture. You have a job? You're working?
I do, yes.
And if you didn't have all these weddings this summer, how's just your general cash flow? Like, you're paying your bills. Is everything okay?
Yeah, everything's great. Everything's okay. Comfortable.
And are you putting money into a retirement plan?
I am. I have a 401k and I also have like my own savings I keep track of.
Okay, excellent. That's great. Are you forced to dip into your savings to pay for all of this?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay. So at the end of the summer, just out of curiosity, what will be left? Not like, I don't worry about the retirement account, but what will be left in your savings account? About how much money?
My personal savings account may be around 30.
That's what will be left after the fact, right?
So what's in there right now?
Maybe like 40.
So you're basically saying, like, is this crazy to spend 10 grand on all these weddings in order to just be a good friend? And like, is that okay? I mean, you're not going into debt to do this. So that's number one. That's good. But I am like a real problem with these destination weddings. Honestly, Dorian, a couple of years ago, I'm an old person. I had 5 weddings in 1 year. One was like a destination to South Africa and it was family. And so there was no question. We had to go. I get it. But like, I don't know, like on some level, I guess I want to know for you, like each of these people is slightly different in your life. There's nothing bad that's going to happen to you if you blow the 10 grand. If you want to do it, it doesn't seem like the worst thing in the world. Mark, do you have an issue with blowing 10 grand on all these weddings?
No, I thought it was going to be more than 10 grand.
But 2 trips to Spain does feel excessive. So I would, you know, for me, I would not be hightailing it back to Spain twice in a summer. I would pick one or the other and maybe just pick the person who I'm closest to. And I have no issue with blowing the money. It's really not about the money thing as much as it is about, because you have the money. You're not going into debt. You're not saying, oh, I can't put money in my retirement plan. Like, it's fine to live your life. It also feels a little onerous to have to do this twice. So
Wait. Dorian, how old are you?
29.
Okay. I'm 29. I got the chance to go to Europe twice over the summer. And it's 10 grand. That's not going to make or break my life. I'm going. So go, Dorian.
Oh, my God. Twice to Spain? I'm thinking the schlep factor more than anything else. But okay. What do you want to do after we get off this call? Like, just tell us, where are you feeling now? Go? Just do it? What the hell?
I'm kind of leaning towards go. I wonder if it's more about a gift. Like, do you think that a gift is necessary after spending money?
No, totally not.
Your gift is your present.
Exactly. It is a token present. You know, it would be a token. Also, like, these brides are insane. Dorian, are you married or not?
I'm not married, no.
Can you pranky swear with me that you will stop the nonsense with all these parties? It's incredible. Like, what a burden to put on all of your friends. It's not fun at some point. I'm sorry. Anyway, go enjoy yourself on your wedding and your wedding odyssey this summer. Good luck, and thank you so much for joining us. Okay, gang, you know, some of you are shy. You don't want to come on camera. I get it. You can send us an email. Of course, just go to JillOnMoney.com, click the Contact Us button. Jillionaire Andrew from Rhode Island. I got to put my glasses on to read this, gang. That's the problem. He asks, I'm 37, a homeowner, married, and we just had a newborn. Should I be looking to get term life insurance? Okay, gang. Now, you have a baby, there's a marriage, maybe there's a death. These life events should trigger a overall rethinking of your financial priorities, right? You got to take care of this little baby, or maybe you just inherited money, or gosh, we're joining our finances. All of these things are actually really good moments to think big. Mark, why would someone need life insurance in general?
Yeah, you know, when I hear this question, I kind of just think to myself, and I never really gave two you-know-whats about insurance until we took out a big fat mortgage. That was like really the first time that I'm like, okay, my wife and I, we both need to get life insurance, term life insurance policies, because God forbid, you know, one of us walked outside and got hit by a New York City bus, and we lost one of our incomes, we'd be on the hook for that entire mortgage. It would not be a good recipe. In fact, it would probably be a recipe for disaster. And then the other thing that happened with us, which I think you just mentioned, was when we had our child. That was the other situation, kind of the same thing, but now you're talking about a living, breathing little baby. And God forbid something happened and you have to pay for childcare, or you got to pay for a future cost of college. And all of this was on top of what you get through work, because through work, it's great, but you really only can get so much.
I think that the best way to consider life insurance and what you need is not to go with a silly rule of thumb. It really is different. Now, I mean, on one hand, I want to remind you that, yes, you're trying to replace income and live a lifestyle. But as Mark said, you might want to fund a future obligation like college or maybe retirement for your spouse. And even if you are a non-working parent, sometimes people are like, well, I don't need life insurance. I'm just at home with a kid. As Mark said, you would have to hire somebody to come into your home and take care of your kid, or your spouse would have to be home with a kid, and now you need something to live on. So there are a ton of life insurance calculators out there. Skip the estimates, not 10 times your income or this time. Don't do that. Figure out what you need for you. And as Mark said, term life insurance, which is essentially buying insurance for a period of time, then it goes away after that time is up. That's all you mostly need. There's very few cases where you need the kind of insurance that lasts for your whole life.
Rich people never sell their investments in order to buy a house. What they do instead is they buy a $1 million house using $0 out of pocket. Let me explain. Okay, so let's say that somebody wants to buy a $1 million house and they have $1 million in stock. What most people would do is they'd sell $200,000 of their $1 million stocks and they would use that as a down payment on their property. But what they don't realize is that's going to trigger a $40,000 capital gains tax right away. And that's like throwing away a brand new car or a year of college tuition. So what rich people do differently is they borrow against those stocks for their down payment. They keep their stocks and they just use them as collateral for the loan. And then the brokerage, they'll lend them that $200,000 at maybe 5%. Now, here's why this is genius. They avoid that $40,000 tax bill completely right off the bat. Their stocks are growing at roughly 10% a year, but they're borrowing from their stocks at only 5%. They get a super low rate on their interest rate because it's a low risk to the bank. I mean, this is the reason that rich people get richer. They never sell their assets. They just borrow against them. So if you want to learn how to think like the rich without having to be born into it, and if you want to learn how to build your wealth in a way that feels ethical and sustainable and helps your community, then write freedom in the comments and I'm going to share my free guide on exactly how to build wealth directly with your neighbors. Because the first step to growing rich is learning how to play the game.
So this pains me because it pains me in a number of ways. I hate to beat up on a sister, you know. So this person is, I looked her up. I went online, I went down a rabbit hole, and do you think that she knows anything about what she's saying, which is essentially borrow against your investment account because
a margin loan.
So a margin loan is if you have an investment account, not a retirement account, okay? A brokerage account that has money in it, you can borrow against it, and wherever you hold that, whether it is in Vanguard or Schwab or E-Trade or Robinhood, you can borrow money against it. The collateral of the loan is the account itself. So, you know, this woman is saying, hey, you know what? This is so great because, you know, stocks go up 10% a year. The one thing she fails to recognize is that when you have a margin loan, if the stock market drops and the value goes below a certain amount, the bank where it's held, the institution where it's held, will force sell assets in the portfolio. So you are forced to sell, usually at the wrong time, meaning as markets are plummeting. So it is not a riskless thing. Okay. The second thing is, like, how many people have just like, oh yeah, I got a ton of money in my brokerage account that I can borrow against it and ethically buy real estate. She's a real estate hawker. That's what she's doing. She also calls herself a financial activist. I don't even know what that means.
Yeah. The idea, the concept of a margin loan, it's nothing new. I mean, she's not breaking news with the whole idea of a margin loan. Anyone with a big fat brokerage account, the ones that she's talking about, I'm almost sure that they know what a margin loan is. And we've accounted people over the years on the show, on the various shows that we have, and they've asked us, margin loan, do you think that's something I should do? And like you said, like 99% of the time, it's not something we would ever recommend. It's very risky.
It's risky. And, you know, it can be useful. It's like me saying, like, there's a certain type of insurance. You should buy term insurance, not whole life. There is a small percentage of the time where we think having some insurance in place for your whole life makes sense. There's a small percentage of time where we think actually having a margin loan could make sense. That said, this is nonsense. And it pains me to take down in this TikTok a sister, Mark. It's tough.
So are you saying you did not leave a comment to get her free guide?
I didn't. And what is free? what comes next after
nothing's free?
What comes after the free guide? Do you think it's a course? Well, that's it. That is the program. Mark, another fantastic moment that I spend with you. It's just not enough time with you. I can't wait to have you back in the studio so we can have our fun together and torture you a little bit. What if I took you out to lunch every time we had the show here?
I don't know.
Oh, wait a minute. When it's food, it's possible. Gang, if you've got any sort of question on your mind about anything remotely financial, if you see something, you want to talk to us, you want to run a scenario by us, go to JillOnMoney.com, click the Contact Us button. You can definitely come live. It's the best. Please follow us, elevate us, boost us. Thanks so much for watching. We'll catch you next time.
Bye-bye.